BFYLP, 100.9 in Belfast, Maine.
Support for Belfast Community Radio comes from our listeners and from Waldo County Healthcare, serving the healthcare needs of Waldo County residents through Waldo County General Hospital, 5 rural health centers, home health and hospice services, public health nursing, physicians' offices, and educational programs. Online at wcgh.org.
You are lucky because you have found WBFY Belfast, Maine, 100.9 FM on your radio dial and streaming worldwide. This is BelfastCommunityRadio.org. Find us on Facebook, and thanks for tuning in.
Welcome to Books and Writers, a masterclass in how to be a better, more successful writer. I'm your host, Spencer Stevens. We talk with people who know books and publishing. Writers, writing teachers, editors, publishers, booksellers. We demystify the process of getting published and getting noticed. On Books and Writers, you can learn about book launches, finding literary agents, winning awards, writing dialogue for characters who are even smarter than you are, thinking like an entrepreneur. Books and Writers is inspiration and education for writers in all stages of their careers.
Our guest this week is Edward Daniel Hunt, a Maine author. But first, this news. This week in news about books and writers from Maine. If you want to attend an author event, you may find you have to pay a fee. Bookstores have found that the many virtual events so popular nowadays don't sell books. To make ends meet, they're charging fees for folks who want to attend events for the most popular modern authors. Maine's Lily King is appearing in Portland's Mechanics Hall November 9 to promote her new book, 5 Tuesdays in Winter. She's also appearing November 11 with NPR's Scott Simon. Both charge a fee for those who want to attend. Ann Patchett appears on November 23 for the launch of her new book, These Precious Days. There is no fee, but the Greenlight Bookstore says it welcomes donations. Pakistani author Farah Ali appears at Portland's Print, a bookstore, on the 18th of November to promote her new book, People Want to Live. There is no fee. Bookstores all over Maine are urging people to buy their holiday gifts early. Supply chain problems nationwide are making shortages of books appear likely. In the writers writing about writers category comes news that two different authors have penned biographies of poet Edgar Allan Poe. Scott Peeple recently issued The Man of the Crowd, Edgar Allan Poe in the City. John Tresh published The Reason for the Darkness of the Night, Edgar Allan Poe and the Forging of American Science. Several Maine authors have books out about Maine. Elizabeth Strout, author of Olive Kitteridge, has published O. William, a story about the life of her character, Lucy Barton, protagonist in Strout's 2016 novel, My Name is Lucy Barton. What Rough Beasts is just out, written by Belfast poet and printmaker Leslie Moore. We're featuring prints and poems about animals, available through Literal Press. Mind Trap by Matt Cost, about murder, art theft, drug-smuggling lobstermen, and budding romance on the Maine coast, available through Encircle Press. And The Finest Christmas Tree by John and Anne Hassett, a children's book about growing Christmas trees in a world that seems to love only artificial trees. My guest this week on Books and Writers is author Edward Daniel Hunt. Edward Daniel Hunt is author of Penance, a crime novel recently released by Adelaide Book Publishing. Penance is about the life and activities of John Gilfillan, a Boston homicide detective who comes to Maine looking to protect a witness in a murder case. Edward Daniel Hunt has an undergraduate degree from the University of New Haven and a graduate degree from Lesley University. His short stories have appeared in the Scarlet Leaf Review, Down in the Dirt magazine, and Adelaide Literary magazine. Hitmen Have Feelings Too was named a finalist in Adelaide Magazine's 2018 Literary Award Contest for Best Short Story. Much of his early work and social life was spent in restaurants and bars, as evidenced by his writing. Ed is a member of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance and the Mystery Writers of America. Ed is hard at work on a sequel to Penance, also featuring John Gilfillan. To learn more about Ed, you can find him on the internet at edhuntauthor.com. Edward Daniel Hunt, welcome to Books and Writers. We're happy to have you.
Thank you, Spencer. I'm happy to be here.
I'd like to talk about your newest book, Penance. It's a crime novel, and I understand it's about a Boston homicide detective who is out to protect the Maine teenager who has witnessed a murder. Do I have the basic storyline right?
Well, actually, it was a murder he worked on when he was a Boston detective, homicide detective, 10 years ago. Now he's retired, living on Old Orchard Beach, and he's asked by the daughter of the victim, who was a doctor at a hospital in Boston. In my head, it was always Faulkner Hospital, but it could have been a different hospital. And because he didn't want to look into it. He thought, well, you know, we really chased down every lead and da-da-da-da. But she convinced him because she said the Boston police had got a message from somebody mentioning something to do with Jamaica Plain, and somebody from relatives from Jamaica Plain were involved in this murder. And based on that, he decided to look into it again. So it was 10 years later. And basically, the story's about finding Lori Doyle. Lori was 16 at the time. And she walked in on her boyfriend and his two cousins, and it was a drug deal going bad where they were trying to get the doctor to write scripts, and he saw one of their faces, and her boyfriend ended up killing the doctor. Mm-hmm. So she witnessed this.
Yeah.
And she still ended up marrying him a couple of years after that. Then he went to jail for something else and was away. And while he was in jail, she divorced him and, using an alias, moved up to Maine with her child. She had a little girl by him, and started a new life for herself under a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And so it ends up that Gil Villain, the detective, John Gil Villain, somebody pointed him in that direction that she might know something because they thought the Doyles might have been involved. That was her husband's name, and he came from a family of criminals. And he started looking for her. But at the same time, her ex-husband, who had been in prison for something else, got out, and he was looking for her because they were concerned that she might be talking to authorities about, if not that murder, but other things they were involved with.
Mm-hmm.
So he's looking for her. And then also this Italian is part of the mafia in Boston. His boss had him looking for her because they had done some various enterprises with this Irish group and were afraid that they might be exposed. So this hitman, and he was basically a hitman because he did a lot of that for the mafia, he was out looking for her. So it was all these people looking for her, including her father, who had been abusive when she was growing up, but he started looking for her to warn her. He wanted to make it up to her.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these four different people all looking for the same person and trying to track her down. And that's basically what the book's about. But there's a few other homicides along the way, and
yeah,
a lot of other, you know, locations. And I always say it's the underside of Boston. I lived in Boston for a few years, and this is the part of Boston you don't want to see. The little crummy bars and the strip joints on the North Shore. And Maine, it was mostly takes place along the coastline.
Yeah. Well, your description of the book, Ed, makes me feel compelled to ask, did you have a life of crime at some point?
No, pretty boring, but I did. I left home early,
yeah,
16, and I lived in Providence, and I worked the parking lots. They were Teamster in those days, so I got to be a Teamster at a young age.
Yeah.
This was just all around you, all the various crimes going on. I mean, I can remember there was this little Italian restaurant on Federal Hill. That was the Italian district, still is today. Now it's more of a tourist attraction where you can go have Italian pastries and, you know, Italian dinner and enjoy it. But back then it was, you know, run by the mafia. That was their stronghold. And I can remember a little diner up there right on Atwell's Avenue, and somebody, it was a planned hit, walked in and shot somebody in the first booth and killed them. And now, in most restaurants, that would kill the ref business and the place would close. No, there's a waiting line. People all wanted that booth. It's just only in Rhode Island. And that was just kind of how it was down there. You know, and you just took it for granted that if you had a vending machine in your you know, if you had your trash picked up, that was mafia control. You know, a lot of kickbacks.
So your growing up years, you had some exposure to crime. Was that part of the inspiration for your book?
Part of it, yeah. It's a number of things. I did know about a homicide that's somewhat similar to the one I described in the book, but I changed some things. But it was about somebody who went missing, and they found his body much later. In the book, I say it's in the Quincy Quarries, which it could have been, because when they drained it, they found a bunch of bodies in there.
Oh, my gosh.
Real life. Yeah, it was a good place. Some of them were accident, because kids used to go up and jump into the water very foolishly and throw rocks and chop rocks underwater. But there were, that was a place they dumped bodies that, the mafia wanted, or anybody wanted to get rid of. They dropped some in there, too. So yeah. I used that as a locale.
I guess those places do exist, don't they?
They do. Yeah. Oh, pretty much. You know, I based this, there's a strip club in the book in near Boston. It was basically north of Boston. There weren't any strip clubs right in Boston. And that was, used as a locale in the book. There's a massage parlor in the book, and that was in Maine before I moved to Maine, but it was well known. It was supposedly mafia controlled out of Boston, but it had Maine, some individuals that were partners in it from Maine too, and it was a men's health club that failed, and they made it into a massage place and did more than massage there. Anything you wanted, you could get there.
Yeah.
This is true, and the FBI finally raided it and shut it down before I moved to Maine, but
yeah.
It just made a good story.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times the things you experience in life or read about or know about, in my second book I'm finishing up now, there's a prison scene where one inmate is saying, I can't wait to get out of here, and I want to go to that donut shop, that topless, where they have topless waitresses. Donut shop. And then some other inmate who had been in prison that long said, well, you're out of luck because Joe's boyfriend burned it down, based on a true story. That was just west of Augusta. There was a donut shop briefly, maybe a year, if that had topless waitresses serving coffee and donuts.
And there was a guy in prison who could no longer hope for something exciting like a visit to the donut shop.
He was burned down by some boyfriend.
Yeah, too much. Too much.
I mean, you can't make some of this stuff up.
Yeah. The protagonist in Penance, your most recent novel, is John Gilfillian. He's also the protagonist in the novel that you're working on at present. Is that right?
Series. He's in the second one, too, yeah.
Okay. And tell us about John Gilfillian. What kind of a guy is he?
John's a really stand-up guy. He was a good detective. He had a rough upbringing. His father was abusive to him, his mother, and everybody else. And he moved in with his uncle, who was also a cop and a sergeant on the Boston Police. His father was, too. His father was a cop. But he had a rough upbringing. It wasn't good. He saw his mother beat a lot, and whereas he got bigger, he fought back himself. And he finally moved out at 16 because he knocked his father out, and his mother said, you got to leave. You don't know what he'll do when he comes in. Yeah. So, but he's a good guy. He hasn't been done well in his love life, but he's a really generous guy, nice guy. But he was married once. It only lasted a few years. He was taking medication for his depression because he suffered from pretty severe depression at times. And that was something that continued throughout his life. And his uncle had it, too. So it ran in the family, his depression can.
Yeah.
So he was living in Old Orchard. He retired. He'd been retired 5 years when the daughter of the victim approached him and wanted him to reopen the case. And he is still doing some work for a buddy of his, which was a retired lieutenant from Boston who had a detective agency in Portland. So he's doing some side work for him, too. And he had contacts in Maine so he could do some research and search what's going on and try to track down.
Sure. Can we call Penance crime fiction? Would that be a fair characterization?
Definitely. That's what I call it.
Yeah.
On the cover of the book, it just says fiction, but that was the publisher's idea. I think he thought it sells more if it doesn't say crime. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I always say it's crime fiction, yes.
And we talked about your experience in growing up in in Rhode Island, you got you saw some crime, maybe got inspired by it for your writing. Is it? Do you suppose it's any more difficult to get published if you're writing crime fiction than other forms of fiction?
No, actually, it was a very calculated decision to do crime. I was just, you know, my favorite authors are just crime. I like some, you know, I like, Bruce Coffin, right, locally. I like some of the crime novels, but my favorite authors are Richard Russo, and I think I mentioned it before, Ken Harris, who isn't as well known, but was a best song author. But his was nice, kind of slice of life, small town stuff, but very well written. So I really spend more time on my characters, and that's sometimes good. Some people love it and say they love the characters. And then you have some that who are diehard, you know, crime novelists, readers, and they want, you know, procedural stuff. They mm-hmm. want a very tight, where I wander off and tell two or three other stories at
yeah.
the same time.
Yeah. And I understand you took some chapters of the book and turned them into short stories and submitted them and got them published.
You know, early on, I just wanted feedback, and you know, people, and I think all authors do. You want to see how is it just you? Are you doing okay? What, you know, what should change? And you know, I take parts of my book to any kind of conference, and because it always has a session where somebody's going to review it and give you feedback, and I got some good feedback that way. But then it just dawned on me there are all these literary magazines and places you could publish a short story, and I thought, hey, I'll do that and see what kind of feedback I get, if I'm on the right track. So I did that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 were just from the novel.
Yeah.
And 4 of them got published eventually, but not at first. At first I kept running into, you know, just turned it down, and then finally, and I think I saved it, I printed it out and saved it, one very kindly editor sent me back a message saying this is very well written, and if it's, you know, and it seems more like a chapter from a book, if it is, you're on the right track and keep it up. He says, but this is not a short story.
Yeah.
I remember laughing because he was right. There was no real beginning or end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a pivotal moment for you, I suppose, wasn't it?
Well, it taught me to go back to the drawing board and revise, and I made them into short stories. I knew what you had to do. You had to have a beginning, and I had too much detail. I was told that by a couple of editors for a short story, you know,
yeah.
too much background.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So that's a tremendously creative way to get feedback on a book and to find the avenues you might want to find to mm-hmm. do editing and revising. Had you thought of that before you began down that road, or it just turned out that way?
I really didn't give it much thought. I always thought I'd write my novel, send it out, and the next day they'd call me and we'd publish it.
Yeah, right.
Now, you and I both, because you're an author too, you know it doesn't quite work that way.
Yeah, that's very true.
I don't know how many, you know, I got so many turned down, and then I try to get an agent, because if you want a big publisher, you need an agent, especially the New York publishers, and I got interest, which, you know, I think it would have been better if they just hated it and said no.
Yeah.
So by asking for more pages and acting interested, it was harder when they did say no, you know?
Yeah. And did you ever sign up with an agent, or did you end up just going on your own to find a publisher?
I went my own way, and I just kind of stumbled in it, too.
Yeah.
I had submitted a short story to Adelaide's literary magazine, and they published it. And then later on, the editor sent me a note saying you should enter this into our contest. So I did, and it was a finalist, a lot of finalists, and it got published in there. End of the year, summary of all these short stories. But so when I got the copy of, you know, with all everybody else's short stories in it, I started reading all the backgrounds on it. And I came to one woman who, in her blurb at the end, also said, "In my book will be coming out by Adelaide Publishing in da 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 in whatever month." And I said, I didn't even know they had a publishing company. I just thought they were a magazine. But that made me, you know, I Googled them, and sure enough, they did, and how to submit. They wanted you, you know how a lot of them do, they want you to only send the first 25 pages or something like that. And I said, well, that's nonsense. I'm sending, they already like this one chapter. I'm sending the whole book.
Yeah.
So I sent it to the editor I dealt with, the whole book, and in 10 days, I got an offer, they'd publish it. So
tremendous.
That's how it happened.
Yeah.
Not, hindsight, they're small. Too much overreach on their part. I think they mean well, but I think they, you know, just trying to do too much, and they can't live up to it.
Yeah.
So, future, I'm going to try for another publisher. I want one with better distribution. That's the key. I know you can't count on your publishers to do a lot of marketing for you. It's just a fact of life. They don't. Even the big ones do. Limited. I mean, they'll get it into stores for you, but beyond that, you're kind of on your own.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm up for that. I spent a lot of time when the pandemic hit. I said, I got to do something. So I did a lot of stuff online, and I did the blog tour they set up for me, the little marketing company I was using. You know, entered anything I could, submitted anything I could, and, you know, did my best and did okay.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. I want to ask about your connection with your publisher for just a minute before we go on to other topics. I'm curious, the process you went through to select the publisher, and you're planning at this point to not go with them again for subsequent books. Is there any lessons learned in that process, things that you might have asked about in greater detail that might have taken a better direction?
So I wasn't that surprised. There's a number of authors who've complained about them, about them not fulfilling what they said they're going to do. I think I may have mentioned it before. They actually had a little marketing outline that they sent with the contract and had all these things they're going to do, and none of them got done.
Yeah.
They also had an outline, a timeline of when I would get the book back for a final proofing, and it had 90 days. I could make any changes I want, yada, yada. Well, I got it 10 days ahead of when it was supposed to be released.
Yeah.
And I was booked, you know, I think I've mentioned before, 14 different events. And I just didn't want to lose out on all of that. So I said, no, we'll just go with what we got. And hindsight, there's things that should have got changed. But
yeah. And your book had the misfortune of having a publishing date very shortly before we went under national lockdown for the pandemic.
Oh, actually, the book was, the paperback came out the last week in February in 2020, and actually it hit right then everything. I 2 weeks after that, I was scheduled to have my book launch at a restaurant, a bar on the ocean at Old Orchard. I was having live music, and I was going to have a big party.
Yeah.
And they closed. And I had a bookstore lined up to sell books there for me, a local one. They closed.
Oh, and, gee whiz.
I had several bookstores I was going to sign books. They closed.
Yeah.
And then they came, the conferences. There was one in Boston, I think it was called The Muse or something. I was signed up for that. I had opportunities to sell books. Also, you could be on panels and all this other stuff. So that looked good. That got canceled. And then I had one in New York, which is supposedly the biggest one in the country, book fair and everything. And that's held at the Javits Center. Senator Javits, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you remember, during the pandemic, they made that into another hospital for the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so that got postponed. That was supposed to be like late May, early June, and then it got canceled by July. They just canceled it.
Yeah.
So I had a bunch of these things, just one after another. They all canceled.
Yeah.
The last one to cancel was this farmer's market down in Natick, Massachusetts. And I always joke that I think they paid with cucumbers and squash, but still, they were, you know, he moved some books.
Yeah.
You know.
And despite those obstacles, the sales of tenants have been pretty good. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you managed that.
Yeah, I was very discouraged around that time. I started saying, oh, my, you know, this isn't going to work. I'm not going to sell any books. I'll never get published again. And so it was poor me for about a week or two, and then I said, okay, knock it off. What am I going to do here? And I had put aside $10,000. I said I was going to spend that going to conferences and hotels. I was even thinking of taking, I didn't count it as part of the budget, but the publisher participated in some around the world book fairs, one in Portugal, Germany, England, and France. So I was thinking of going to one of those and selling books at their booth or whatever. Just for a vacation more than anything else, but I figured, hey, it'd be a tax write-off.
Yeah.
So I had some money put aside for that. And when this all crashed, I said, well, I'm going to put it into marketing. And I had met Amy, Amy Millette. Oh, God, I'm forgetting her first name, the last name. I think it's Millette. But she spoke at a conference, and she was really knowledgeable statistics. How many books you have to move to be in Walmart's or Sam's Club or any of those places. You have, you know, that space has to generate so much revenue, and your book has to sell that many times to do it. And airport bookstores, same thing. It's high volume. You've got to move books so you can't get in there.
Yeah.
So she had a lot of facts and figures. She was very good. And I had her card. And so I called her first, and we talked to her, and she told me they could come up with a marketing strategy.
Hey, can you tell us what company Amy was with?
It's called New Shelves. New Shelves.
Yeah, S-H-E-L-V-E-S.
And what's that?
Shelves is spelled S-H-E-L-V-E-S.
Correct.
Okay.
And she, nice woman. And I think she was, at that point, starting to think she was backing out of it a little. She'd been doing it for a while. But she had, who was like her right hand and like executive director, Carrie Ray Bonham. And Carrie is who I really dealt with more. I mean, there was some conference calls with both of them, but Carrie kind of took over on the day-to-day stuff. And she was great. She's actually running the company now, today.
Yeah.
Very knowledgeable, had good ideas, and got things done. You know, they did some, you know, video ad things that you could use, and they came up with a marketing plan, and we're going to hit the librarians, and then we're going to do this. We're going to try to get a book bub review, which is hard to get, but if you get one, it sells books,
yeah.
Which it did.
Mm-hmm.
So they had some good plans, and they seemed to know what they were talking about. Yeah. So I was very pleased with them, actually.
And New Shelves qualifies as a book publicist, is that right?
No, as a publicist, yeah, or marketing. I don't know what you want to call it. They never labeled themselves, but they were good.
Okay.
Yeah.
But their mission is helping authors sell books, basically, mm-hmm. to get publicity and
yeah,
get build an audience.
Yeah, best-selling authors that, you know, use them. Some of them, I know one or two, but they remain, they don't want to advertise that they're using website. I won't say
okay.
Any names. But, yeah, they were good. They're good at what they do.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned to me when we had an earlier conversation that your experience with BookBub was very positive and really earned you a lot of sales. I'm curious about that experience and how that
yeah.
went.
Yeah. Well, BookBub is, you know, the first time I think I may have told you that I got turned down, and that was like in May of 2020. We tried it. Didn't work. They just passed it back. But they did say, try us again, which is... I'll grasp at anything. That sounded like encouragement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, in May of 2020, I had very few reviews. I didn't have any endorsements yet. So, you know, they passed us by. But we went back at them in August, and by that time I had, you know, Bruce Corfitt. Do you know Bruce? Bruce is a Maine.
Yeah, I think he's a crime writer here in Maine.
He is.
Yeah.
He is. A good one. He's won a number of awards. He wrote a nice endorsement, read the book, and wrote something for me. And Edwin Hill, also a crime writer. He's also, I think he's like a vice president of one of the publishing houses. But he writes and had a couple of best-selling books.
Mm-hmm.
One was Little Comfort. He was actually in the Walmart in the airport bookstores. He did well.
Yeah.
But he wrote a very nice review of it and read it to the end and wrote a nice review. And I had met him at a conference before that. He was one of the ones who reviewed my second book
yep. At
one of these sessions and gave me some pointers. One of them being Never Kill the Dog, and that stuck with me.
That's a good rule.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're
yeah, and that really seemed to do well. We had a promotion and lowered the ebook price quite a bit. And, you know, and with BookBub, I forget, they have some crazy number of subscribers. It's, I don't know, it's millions. And they try to, you know, target what your audience would be. For me, it'd be people that are open to crime type and those type. Suspense or whatever, and that totaled over 4 million people they were sending it out to
yeah.
in four or five different countries, and it did really well. It really took off on Amazon and had a really good week. You know, I was on the best selling rankings on Amazon in a number of categories.
Yeah,
the best being crime fiction, where I got to 3.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Also in Canada, I was on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it made a big difference. Yeah.
And your connections in the literary community, the community of writers that you had met and befriended, that became your leverage, so to speak, for getting into the BookBub circle and making things happen, it sounds like.
Well, I think the reviews did, yes.
Yeah.
And they see that you've got good reviews, and by that time, my numbers on Amazon were probably in the 70s or 80s by then. Now it's up 120-something, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so that all helped, and, you know, and yeah, so that stuff's important.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's you know, not everybody's happy about it, but being an author, if you want to be a successful author, you also have to get out and sell your product.
Darn right.
I know some really good authors who hate that part, don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And you can understand that, I think. But at the same time, you're probably not going to have the success you might want.
Yeah, sure. Now, you're a member of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. And
I'm also a member of Mystery Writers of America and Sisters in Crime of New England. That's a national organization, but just like the Boy Scouts had it, they let Girl Scouts in, they had to let guys in at some point, I guess. Maybe 10% is male now.
Sure. And those connections, did they help with publishing and finding an audience?
They do help. You know, the fact that I knew Edwin Hill and knew Bruce pretty well, you know, helped me get reviews from them. Yeah, it does help. It does help.
Yeah.
That network is very important.
And the short stories that you had published out of the book, it sounds like those helped you build a little bit of a platform that turned into getting the book published in the first place. Yeah.
Well, I remember being at some conference where one of the speakers was saying that, you know, agents and publishers look to see that if you've been published anywhere, and that if if some other editor for a short story thought your writing was good enough to be published, they, you know, look at yours a little more seriously than they would if you hadn't been published.
Sure.
Yeah. And that made sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and let's talk about the blog tour for just a minute. That, do you consider that to have been a successful experience?
Absolutely. I enjoyed it. It was probably 7 or 8 blogs. A couple of them just did their reviews and didn't really interact with me. Others sent me questions, and I liked their questions. Some were pretty good. You know, there was one I think was from England or someplace, and I remember one of, and it was a female, I believe. They don't tell you, so I didn't ask. But she said something about who would your favorite character would be to go have a cup of tea with.
Yeah.
And it could be from your book or somebody else's book.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it'd be it's Donald Sullivan from Nobody's Fool by Richard Russo. But I don't think he'd come out for a cup of tea, but maybe a shot of Irish whiskey or cold beer.
That is a great character. He was the one played by Paul Newman in the movie.
Paul Newman, absolutely.
Yeah. That is a great character.
Yeah. Yep. And I really liked that book. I thought that was very well written. Yeah. So, yeah, that was my character.
Yeah.
You know, and I said why. I said, you know, he's good-hearted. He was aware that he had screwed up his life, but he still had a good heart, and, you know, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always remember that from one of the questions. I thought that was a good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. How much of your experience and how has your experience helped you with getting your second novel written? Can you tell us anything about that?
I'm a procrastinator, so
yeah.
I think having one published and people asking me when's the next one coming, and I have that, get that all the time, because I also posted on, God, I want to forget the name of it, there's a website where you can test your work and just post things, and it's not considered like really publishing. You're just posting it out there. And I posted the first 10 chapters. I do a chapter, put it out. And so I don't know. I probably had 100 people following it.
Yeah.
And so I got some good feedback from that.
Yeah.
I think you get people asking you, what's the next one coming? And I really like that. And I think they're serious. And so I do think that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Get you moving for the second one.
Sure. And with your first and second novel, have you had beta readers look over your material, or have you had volunteer editors?
Yeah. Two. One of them is my best friend, and he's a consultant, and he's a heavy reader, but he's a really good guy, and he'll critique it and does a nice job. And the other is my younger son, the college professor.
Yeah.
Who's also a very good writer. He's had a lot of stuff published and and he wants to write, do screenplays and things. I keep telling him he should. He's a really good writer.
Yeah.
But so he critiques it. He's also my tech guy. Anything technology he can do. he set up, my Facebook page, author page, my website. You know, he does all of that kind of work and ties them in. So if you post this here, it shows up over there.
Yeah.
So he's been a real plus.
That's a tremendous.
I know that all the time.
That's a great resource. I think most of the writers I've talked to who have not reached stardom, like Stephen King or somebody, but getting your IT together is hard. Getting coordinated campaigns on Facebook and on your own personal website, it takes a lot of effort and time. And and you were fortunate enough to have somebody to help you out with that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's really a good kid. All my kids are good kids, but he's a good guy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Do you think with your second book that you might search for an agent, or do you think you'll go to a publisher directly?
I think I probably will try. I'm going to Crime Bake in a couple of weeks for the weekend down in Boston, and there'll be a bunch of agents there. And that one I did pitch a few years ago, and every one of the agents I met with told me to send them, and they didn't do it to all my friends, but every one of them told me to send pages. And you know, I think I told you that was where I had one agent kept asking for more. He dragged it out for months and it said no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a done deal. Little did I know.
Yeah. Well, I think the publishing field, if you're an author who hasn't got a huge reputation, it's there's a lot of trial and error involved. It seems like it sounds like you discovered that too with your experience.
Oh yeah, and I think the best advice I got was from a publisher that I met at one of these things, and the advice was find your own voice and stick to it.
Yeah.
And I do think that's good advice for any author. You know, as much as I love Richard Russo, I won't be Richard Russo or Stephen King or anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like very good advice. I appreciate that very much. And one of the things I've noticed as I did a little research for our chat today was you had somebody put together a video book trailer that's posted up on YouTube. And
tell us. That was New Shelves. They did that.
All right.
Part of it. Yeah, they did a couple of those. The holiday one. They did. Yeah, they've done a few things. Yeah.
And has that been an effective tool for you in marketing your book?
I think it generated some sales. We had a while there where the sales were steady, and I think, it had to come from some of that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
And let's see here. Are you the kind of writer who's always trying to improve your skills? Are you looking for ways to improve your writing? And tell us a little bit about that process. What sort of steps do you take?
You probably heard the term pantser or plotter. You have heard that term?
I don't think I have. No.
Oh, man, well, this is you can remember you heard it here.
Yeah.
I started off, writing on my own, and then I joined the main Writers and Publishers Alliance. You know, I met Bruce Coffin at one of his signing things, and I joined. And I went to, a conference, and they had all these different seminars. And Tess Garrison was one of the speakers, and people were asking her questions. And one of them wanted to know, are you a pantser or are you a plotter? And I'm thinking, what the hell is this? She says, I'm definitely a pantser. And basically it means you write by the seat of your pants. And Stephen King's one. There's a lot of famous people that are, actually.
Yeah.
She went on to say, I know a lot about the character before I start writing. I know kind of how I start. I kind of know where I'm going to end up, but often don't end up there.
Yeah.
It hit home, because up to that, I was kind of getting worried, because I was never a great student. I could write. That was the only thing I did well in college, and I did have good grades in college, but that's because I was paying for it. But back in high school and stuff, I was screwed off, and I did not, but I could always write, and that got me by, and I had good SATs, so I got through college and grad school, but she said she's a pantser, and I kind of picked up, because they have seminars on, like, plotting your characters and doing an outline before you ever sit down to write in the whole book. And there was one, I remember one speaker saying you had to write pages on each character, even though you weren't going to use it. That way you know your characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm never going to make this. It's never going to happen. It's not happening. So I loved it when she just got up there and said, nope, I just write and change it. And that's how I write. I write so many pages, and some days I write a lot, sometimes I write very little. And then I go back, I read it, make changes, and then start writing from where I left off. That's how I write.
Yeah.
But I rewrite more than I write. It takes, you know, for probably every time I write a couple of pages, that might take me, you know, a couple of hours, but then I'll spend 10 hours rewriting.
Sure.
Especially after I get the book done, I go back and change things or something doesn't ring right with me or whatever. Yeah. So
Tess was a great source of inspiration for you. That was another.
She was that day, absolutely. Yeah.
Terrific. And you got that inspiration because you went to a writer's conference and happened to have a chance to talk to him.
Yeah, sponsored by the Maine Writers and Publisher Alliance. That was the same conference that they had a panel of agents there, and one was really tough. She was older and experienced and rough, and she was using the F word. She was really rough.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was the one who had said, I think I mentioned before, that she could tell halfway down the page or the first couple of pages, that's it, if they're any good, that she won't read anymore if she knows they're not worth bothering with.
Sure.
And then after lunch, I was signed up to have an agent critique my work. You had to send it in. I think it was 60 pages. Some was a few chapters, anyway. And I had sent it in ahead of time. And lo and behold, which agent did I get? I got her. And I remember when I found out, because they told me earlier that, yes, this is who you're going to take, I was thinking, I might as well go home now. Why would I want to sit down with her and read the first page and throw it back at me? But again, you never know. I sat down, and the first thing out of her mouth was, relax, you're going to get published. I lived on that for months.
I bet.
That was good.
That's the kind of reassurance we all hope for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I take it at this point you don't have a publisher for your book that's in production, and I'm curious, how will your search for a publisher be different than it was for your first one?
Well, I am gonna do both, look for a publisher and look for an agent.
Yeah.
I'm in a better position now. I've sold some books. I have a product. You know, I've got reviews. You know, I could point to something. So I might have better luck getting an agent. But I'm also going to look at publishers. There's lots of stuff out there. I have a book at home that's, you know, it's titled Publishers that You Don't Need an Agent to Submit For.
Yeah.
That's basically the book. And there's a lot of those, and there's articles in the trade magazines and stuff, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I end up without an agent again, that's fine, but I want better distribution. This one was very small, only used Ingram. I'd like them to use some of the other distributors.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for a little more. I don't want to carry all the weight. Yeah. I don't mind marketing and getting out there and doing whatever I have to, but I want the support by the publisher to get it into stores and help get it into stores and things.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious if you've been able to identify any signs or indicators that would tell you, yeah, this is a good publisher who will do a lot of marketing for me and who I can work well with.
Yeah. The book that I have of list of publishers that accept it, there's some that they critique them and they say things like this one that's, I think what it's called, Crooked Lane or something, but that does a lot of crime and mystery. But their biggest plus is they use Random House and someone else for all the distribution. So any place Random House can get a book into, you can get a book in through them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a big plus.
Yeah.
Somebody who has that kind of access.
Yeah.
And they had good reviews. And the book was pretty good because it didn't tell you if they thought this one really goes to town marketing for you and fighting for you and da-da-da. And then the ones that pretty much still get it published, but you won't get much else out of them.
Yeah, yeah. And this book you're mentioning that lists all the publishers that don't require an agent, do you happen to recall a specific title, or are you working from...
Oh God, it's something like publishers that don't, you know, need agents. You know what, I will text you that when I get home. I'm terrible at remembering it sitting on my coffee table.
I got but, you. Yeah. That would be much appreciated. Thank you, Ed,
I will.
For that. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you, I know I'm not supposed to ask the question. Have you thought about being an agent?
In my own effort, with both of the two books that I published, I searched for agents unsuccessfully. For whatever reason, the agents didn't like my product, and I was not able to get anybody to really express any interest. In retrospect, I think I should have gone to some writers' conferences and things like that. Because so many folks, including you, have said that's a great way to meet some agents, to listen to what they have to say, to get a sense for what their priorities and approach are. I think having that insight into the mind of an agent makes the search probably more productive. That's my hunch, anyway.
I think so.
Yeah.
I had a lot of people giving me guidance along the way. I remember early on Bruce Kaufman saying, you should do this. Make sure you go to this conference. There'll be a lot of people here. And it's true. You do get to meet some others and start to make some connections.
Sure.
Get someone to at least look at it,
Yeah. The conferences you've been to, have they all been New England conferences, or have they been out of the area?
All the ones I've been to date are New England, Boston, and Maine conferences. I've been to some things that were down, one in Rhode Island, I think, at one time.
Yeah.
But that's it so far. Now, I was going to be selling books at once in New York and elsewhere, but that was after I got published.
Right. Among the conferences you've had the opportunity to attend, are there any that you can recommend as being especially helpful for any of the authors who might be listening to the show?
I think CrimeBake. That was the one that Bruce Kaufman told me, you got to go to that. You should go to that. That's where he got an agent. And of course, he was at a homicide in Portland, which isn't a bad background for somebody who's writing detective novels.
Yeah.
And he's a good writer.
Bruce is excellent.
He had three agents offer to represent him after his first CrimeBake conference he went to.
That's having a good day.
Yeah, he had great. Now, I went to CrimeBake and I went to all these agents. And, you get 10 or 15 minutes of each one, and you just like a round table. It's kind of like speed dating.
Yeah.
It doesn't work out as well. but I didn't get anywhere. But I think his background really was a help, and he's a great guy. He really is a special guy.
Yeah.
Wish him much success.
Yeah. It's very encouraging that you have found other authors as part of a community of authors who have offered you not only encouragement but insight into your work and even reviews. That makes me think that our field is filled with some good people who are willing to help.
Absolutely.
Folks who haven't gotten out there yet. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in healthcare for the last 40 years, and I have a lot of friends in healthcare, but it was always so much more formal. You're always in a suit.
Yeah.
No one had alcohol during the day, and then they'd have a little cocktail reception after. I liked the Writers Association from day one. I remember they having an awards ceremony downtown in Portland, and I walked right in. The bar was open.
Yeah.
It was open the whole time. People were going up to the bar the whole time. They joked around. And I think the other thing that always struck me is you have, the people that were dressed appropriately within, tie and suit, and then for guys, and then you had the ones that looked like they were homeless.
Yeah.
And they were probably the most successful there.
You gotta love writing.
Just liked it.
Yeah.
Met some very nice people, and people that are more than willing to share, give you their thoughts and what worked for them or what didn't work for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's very, very encouraging. I'm happy for your sake that you had that experience. That sounds like a very positive thing. Have you had other writers approach you to ask you for your opinion about things or for you to review their books?
Yeah, at times, I've recommended Kathy Bucci, who I mentioned to you, as an independent editor. A number of people have called me and said, who are you using? How was she? And I know a number have reached out to her.
Yeah.
So that's one way they call. And then they ask the same thing. How did you find this publisher? And what did you do? And what worked and what didn't?
Yeah.
And I say a lot of it's luck. That's just part of life.
Yeah, I've heard that from an awful lot of authors too. That you can do so many things right, but without a little luck here and there, it's tough to succeed.
Yeah, you know, you talked about reaching out to agents. I did too, but I know there's a statistic somewhere that says that the average author reaches out to, I think it's 77 agents before it gets one interested.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I think I get up to 40-something when I sit down. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, one of the questions I've always wondered, and it doesn't sound like you're going to have expertise on this, but there are agents out there who will agree to represent you and then take 2 years before they say, you know what, I don't think I'm going to be able to find a publisher for your book.
Yeah.
And you've wasted a ton of time. I've yet to find the person who can give us advice on how to prevent that from happening.
I do think if you're considering an agent, you want to find out who they're representing.
Yeah.
Currently, and do some background check just for those reasons.
Yeah,
you don't
sure.
want somebody who's, you know, going to shop you around once and no one picked up right away, so they, you know, they moved on to the next best great thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And they still got you as a client in case you get lucky and get published. You know, you want somebody who's really behind you and you know, believes in your work, or they're not the right person.
Yeah. With the book that you're working on, your second book, do you expect to take chapters and turn those into short stories like with your first book?
No, well, actually, I don't say no to you, but I did one piece already. There's been one published called Pieces of the Heart, and that was a couple of chapters. It had no crime in it, and it was really more about, in the book, there's the mother of the serial killer who never, his grandmother basically raised him, and his mother was a nice woman, but he wasn't nice to her, or was the grandmother to her. But she, the wife that he was trying to kill was pregnant at the time when he was trying to kill her, and she had a daughter, and her daughter later on ends up working with the mother. The mother didn't raise her. The mother had a troubled life after being attempted murder. But she ended up reaching out because the detective had tracked down the serial killer's mother, and just to see if he could point her in any direction and get some names of other relatives, etc. And he reported back to the ex-wife and her daughter, and the daughter decided to reach out to the grandmother because she didn't have any relatives and she just wanted to make that connection. So I wrote a story with really two chapters that I made a beginning and an end and had them getting back together, and that was Pieces of the Heart.
Yeah.
And published.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm curious, have you learned any lessons about what readers like and what they don't like since you've entered the world of being an author?
You know, I think there's so many different. It kills me because the reviews were good. I'm very grateful for the reviews. I didn't have many. You know, even the ones that gave me like 3 stars instead of 5 had mostly good things to say about the book.
Yeah.
Except for one librarian who gave me a 0.5 star.
Oh, geez.
She didn't like anything.
Yeah.
Nothing but the cover. She loved the cover. That was what got the 0.5 star. And that was my son. My son took the picture of the pier, and he could go also taught photography at one time. He was a photojournalist way back.
Yeah.
And he took a picture of the pier just at it. It was at sunrise in Elbine. It was a very nice picture. You get a lot of compliments. Got a 0.5 star from this damn librarian who hated everything else.
So
what I learned is you're not going to please everybody. The other one I find funny, if you go through the Amazon reviews, and these are all strangers, and one said it was too long, and one said it was too short, and they're right near each other.
Yeah.
So you can't please them all. It's
absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I've learned in my own experience is that most readers, and this is outside the crime area, I'm curious if it's different in the crime fiction area, but most readers don't seem to want the violence or the gore to be too explicit. They would like a little bit of sugar coating on that, it seems like. And
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't write gore.
Mm-hmm.
The few times I've pushed the envelope, but I think if you read on in some of the ads, and I wrote this, and they used it for some of the ads too. It's my, I have it here somewhere because I pulled out an interview I did. What I said before.
Yeah.
The story moves back and forth from Boston's underside to the coast of Maine. If you can believe that one last homicide can make for a happy ending, then this book is for you.
One last homicide makes for a happy ending.
Well, you'd have to read the book, but yeah. There is one last homicide, and it did make a difference in a positive way.
Yeah, sounds like it. It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Well, Edward Daniel Hunt, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Your most recent novel, Penance, is available wherever books are sold. Your next book, which does have a title yet? That's under,
yeah,
under production.
96 Tears.
Like okay. Yeah. And hopefully we can look forward to finding that on the shelves at our favorite bookstore in the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It was a privilege to be on your show. I appreciate it.